Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Hello, welcome back to the Claret and Blue podcast. My name is Dan Rowlands and I'm joined, as ever, by Matt Kendrick. And James Rushton is joining us this evening as well, because we've won and James Rushton is a fickle podcast fan. Gents, are you well?
You're the arm hair fan. Don't start slagging James Rushton off.
Yeah, for context, people don't follow me on Twitter, to the tiny amount of people that
don't need context
and follow
don't
me.
Don't need context, crack on.
I was waiting for Ollie Watkins' goal to be ruled off offside for an arm hair being offside or something, so we'll get to that shortly.
Yeah.
I tweeted at halftime saying, obvious tweeting coming, but Newcastle are woeful, aren't they? And people were telling me, oh, you're jinxing it, stop talking about it, we're going to throw it away now. Like, my tweets have somehow got impact on what Aston Villa do, but Newcastle are poor, aren't they? They're really, really bad.
I don't want to jinx it for the next time we play them, so I don't want to say anything. They'll have a new manager by then.
I'm sure
we'll get into
might have one by the end of this podcast.
What vegetable sandwich chucked at him today then?
Anyway,
also about my Twitter, I tweeted out, you know, when he's pointing it for a substitute to come on, I was like, what is he saying? What do you think Steve Bruce says to people? And people are sending silly replies back. And someone says something about, oh, that's where they threw the cauliflower at me. I just made me laugh because it's not even the right vegetable. And also someone else said it called it a lettuce. So I think Villa fans need to do their vegetable research because it was a cabbage. So anyway, enough nonsense. We're only a minute in. What do you think about the game?
So, you know, when I think of Newcastle, I always think of like the Kevin Keegan Newcastle the first time, and like Alan Shearer scoring all the time and then being up there, you know, qualifying for Europe, and got Gareth Barry having to separate two of their players because of a fight. And since then, it's just been like depressing. And I mean, we're Villa fans and we've been through a lot, but my God, they were like pretending to be like San Marino today or something, like pretending Villa had like 12-0 lead. It was, and that's Newcastle United, you know, a prestigious team, a team of a big name. They might not have been that successful as in terms of winning trophies, but that's poor.
It's weird, bad. Really, because you look at it and you think, obviously, we haven't watched much of Newcastle, but you expect them to be fairly solid defensively, go a little bit route one and, you know, give it to St. Maximan or whoever, like we did when we had Grealish and Bruce there, give it to him, he'll sort it for you. But it's not even that. You just watch Newcastle and I kind of think, I don't even know what they're attempting here, because for the large part, they're not attempting anything. There was no real threat from them. Defensively, they weren't brilliant. Once Villa went 2-0 up before half-time, in the second half, we haven't had to come out of second gear, and you could look at it and go, oh, Villa only beat Newcastle 2-0. We've not tried for the second half.
This is the thing, isn't it? It's, people say you should have killed the game off. The game was killed off.
Yeah.
Like Newcastle had 70% possession. The second half didn't do anything with it. They were, you know, they were diabolical, to put it bluntly. They don't press very well. When they are pressing, when John Joe Shelby's chasing you, it's like jogging. You know what I mean? When you see how Villa do it in Liverpool, all the good teams who do it and who've set the standard for it this year, and even the general pressing statistics have kind of backed off this year, probably because of the COVID and the short break. Newcastle are just not involving themselves in anything and let Villa do whatever they wanted. Two so easy goals, and Villa could have had more. It was just too easy, Matt.
Well, yeah, listen, I'll have a little moan. I'll slag off Newcastle a little bit, but I want to focus on how good Aston Villa are in a while. But I thought Carragher nailed it towards the end. He had a little monologue as he was wrapping up the game and described Newcastle as a nothing club. And
he said they're boring as well.
Yeah, and he's right. And I don't want to lay it on too thick, but yeah. I do feel for him because he's a dreadful combination that they're going through at the moment. But having said that, Aston Villa were very good. I went on a podcast with one of their guys, Andrew Musgrove, yesterday from the Newcastle Chronicle, our sister title. And he asked me, God, who was Villa's danger man? And I started running through the whole team. He said, who were the ones to watch in the Villa team? I said, I'm not going to run through the whole team. And then I proceeded to run through the whole team. And I just do think we have quality. everywhere at the moment. And so there'll be setbacks along the way, and there'll be setbacks when we don't play well, not just because referees have got an agenda against us. But the quality of the two goals, I mean, the first goal, Newcastle didn't, you know, Shelvey didn't track Matt Target or Jack Grealish down the left. But the ball, the quality of the delivery, I mean, we've raved a lot about Matt Cash's delivery, but, you know, fair play to Matt Target, because, you know, he's whipped it into the corridor of uncertainty. Your fellas kind of helped it on.
Shy tick.
Your fellas helped it on, and it's just super brave, isn't it, Ollie? He's just kind of put his head in where it hurt, expecting the goalkeeper to jump with his hands. The goalkeeper's jumped with his shoulders.
He should have took his head clean off. Does it count as a pass back? I don't even know, because Mings did one and Martinez just picked it straight up and ran off. And why did he not just clean Ollie Watkins out? It's fantastic from him, though. He's always like there or thereabouts, isn't it, when the ball's played in?
That sounds like a Steve Bruce, isn't that? Does there or thereabouts. I thought we got rid of that.
But, like, you know, how he gets caught offside by the slight, like Dan said, the little arm here. He's always right on the precipice of causing so much damage. And, you know, I think it was first time in like 9 games, Sky Sports said. And he's always been a danger, but scoring it today, you just get so buzzing for him. You always think he deserves a goal, and he gets it.
When they said about it, it was his first goal in 9 games, obviously I knew it was a drought. They said since the double against Arsenal, and obviously he scored another that he was offside for. Great finish, that second one, by the way. And then you kind of think, oh, no goals in 9 games, that's not great. And then it's his 9th goal of the season. It's like, oh, that's still a good return for a striker. He's just on a big drought, and he's had two, maybe three goals ruled out during that spell as well.
Yeah, I think we should spend a couple of minutes kind of gushing about Ollie Watkins, because I've never seen his head drop. You know, I know he's only been here 5 months, and I've never actually seen him. That's probably why I've never seen his head drop. I've never seen his head drop on the telly. You know, he's just relentless. He takes batterings off defenders and pulls himself back up and continues playing. He makes the ball stick. He runs the left channel. He runs the right channel. You know, he manages to drop deep when he needs to get the ball, but then he's still got the energy to get back in the box. I think we've got a really, really special player there.
Agreed.
And I'm just delighted for him that he's got that goal. And like I said, it's not as if it's weighed on him, is it? You know, you see some strikers who start snatching at things. He's just thought, oh, well, you know, I've got the ability, you know, I've got the energy, I've got the, you know, I've got the brain power to make these runs. And he's just kept at it. So I'm really, really chuffed to bits for him. The second goal as well was just, you know, I think you're right, Troy has only got one foot. I think he's only got a right foot. I don't think he's got a left foot. The finish was absolutely brilliant. And
the way ball he's from Jack as well. Well, yeah, the way, get to the goal.
Well, the way they took the man out in the first place to feed the ball back into Jack. Jack's probably one of the most intelligent players in the Premier League, isn't he? Because a lot of players would whip that back into a busy penalty box. He knows exactly where Traore is. You know, cuts it back to him and then bang, top corner. Brilliant. It was game over. I think it was game over at 1-0, like James said, but it was definitely game over then. I actually thought we were going to go on and batter him then. I think
it was both ways, wasn't
batter him 2-0, but
yeah, we could have been absolutely relentless there and won 4 or 5-0 quite easily. But I think because of the break that we've had, because we've got Jack on a yellow, obviously he came off towards the end. There's a little bit, Ross Barker has only just come back from his injury as well. There's no need to have done any more than we did in that second half. There was no danger that Newcastle were going to come into it. If they do score one goal, you suspect Villa would step it up and score the third anyway, and there was never a threat that we don't win that tonight.
I tell you what, Jack Grealish's reaction when he came off made me laugh. Sulky face, got a face like a smack backside. And it was like,
you still like it now, probably, I'd have thought.
It's like when your kind of mum says you've got to come in for tea and you just want to play for another 5 minutes. Mum, just another 5 minutes. And he's coming with a face like thunder. So brilliant. But that just shows how much he loves playing football, doesn't it? I mean, it's the wise thing to do, like you say, with him walking a suspension tightrope. You can tick that off on your cliche bingo.
People said like Ross Barkley and Grealish ain't happy because they've been taken off. Are they unsettled? Is it, you know, what's going on there? Matt, they just wanted to destroy Nuke. They wanted players to get on the end of their passes. They wanted to make the right ball. Sometimes they made the wrong decision. They wanted it to go a little bit better for themselves today. That's the only problem. They wanted the extra 5-10 minutes to have the extra crack at them. And I feel like going back to what we said earlier, like the matches where Villa have stunned the opposition and played a really great game, it's when the other teams fired a few warning shots. You know, like Liverpool scored a few goals before we battered them. Crystal Palace gave us a warning shot really early on, and we stepped back and went, "Oh, we need to turn this game off." What warning shot? Can we don't want to speak about Newcastle anymore on this one, because we've already hammered him in the first 4 minutes of the podcast. But you know, what warning shot? When did you think, "Oh, Villa need to really turn up now"? Like we said, it was done. It was, you know, the disappointment is players didn't get an extra 5 minutes to get an extra goal. That's the only issue.
And there's a point here that Phil Curry's just commented is exactly what was in my brain. And I'd be disappointed if they were happy to come off.
Yeah.
I don't want Jack Grealish prancing off going, "Oh yeah, well, my job's done. I get to sit on the bench for 10 minutes. They should be upset to come off, because like you said, they want to score goals. They want to win games as comfortably as possible. If he doesn't get 3 minutes out at the end of the game to carry on toying with Newcastle, I expect him to be upset.
I think it's worse, mate. I'm really worried now. I'm expecting the Sunday tabloids tomorrow. You know, Villa rocked by double transfer request. the reaction, just like I said, don't want to talk about Newcastle too much, but Steve Bruce coming. I know there wasn't a crowd there to mock him tonight, but Steve Bruce coming back to Villa Park. It's an allergy time again, but it must be like
one.
When you've fallen out, you know, you've broken up with your partner. And they, you know, and they're still kind of distraught. And they check out your Facebook page and they see you kind of walking hand in hand with your new love and feeding each other kind of Maltesers with your arms intertwined and stuff like that. And
it's a very Hail Dorian love story here.
not only has his time is bad for him where he currently is at, you know, and he's gone back to his first love. Not only are times bad there, but he's seeing this kind of, this I don't know, I feel for him. Not much, but a little bit.
I don't care. Like you said, enough about Newcastle. I'm at risk here of doing what you did when you said you went on this Newcastle podcast and you saw, you know, listening off every player and saying, "I'm not going to talk about everyone," and then going on to do that. I do want to highlight a couple of players, and like I said, I don't want to mention everybody, but we will probably fall into that trap of saying, "Oh, he was good as well. Oh, and so was he." When the team news comes out, some people are thinking that Jacob Ramsey is going to come straight in and replace McGinn. I never thought that would be the case. I thought it would be Nakamba with...
Oh, of course you did.
I did. Oh, I didn't say it anywhere because I was off, so I'd have said it on a preview podcast, but wasn't invited. Anyway, I did think it'd be that. I didn't think he's going to throw Ramsey straight in. There was a possibility that Grealish could have played inside and El Ghazi could have started. That was the other alternative. I didn't see Ramsey starting. But this is like the whole point of the meltdowns pre-game for team news and stuff, and being trying to do loads of preview stuff and guessing what the players might be like. Because at what time was the team? 7 o'clock? People are going, "Oh, Nakamba. Oh, what?" And then he's brilliant.
Nakamba.
He was so good. He's marvellous. Yes. Yeah. Take that off the cliche list.
I've got to tell you about Nakamba. So he made the second most passes in the team with 65. How many of them did he miss?
Oh, as soon as you're asking this.
65 total passes.
As you're asking this, I assume that he didn't miss a single one.
64 he made, so he missed one pass the entire game. It's a reflection of what Newcastle didn't offer. But
yeah.
Nakamba, with the you can only play the game you've got. Nakamba, usually there's so many criticisms. I mean, not being able to pass, not being able to do this and that. He comes in after a break. He's not playing regularly for Villa. Makes every pass given to him bar one, which is can't offer more from a defensive midfielder, really, can you? With nothing to do.
Do you watch matches with Abacus? Because I only watch them with a beer at hand. But there's your geeky stats. We don't need your stats. We can see with our naked eye how good marvellous Nakamba was.
Grant just, one of my friends, Grant, just tagged me in it like this second. So I thought that's bang on and very timely. So.
One of your geeky, boring, nerdy friends. Hello, Grant, if you're watching.
Thing is, until like the 80th minute or so, I was thinking, we've done this without John McGinn. Like I forgot that we were even missing him, do you know what I mean? And go back 18 months, 2 years, John McGinn being missing out of midfield would be an absolute massive blow to Villa. Now I forget he even exists because Marvus Nakamba comes in and he's fine, does a great job.
Oh, mate, a big, strong Glaswegian like him who's probably sat in the stands with a blanket across his knees or something while the rest of the boys did the business. Hey, I'll tell you what I wanted to... I know we're not going to single out every player, but... we've spoken about Matt Target with a delivery for the first goal. I loved it when he went clattering into, who was it, Mankio? He clattered into, and 5 minutes later he smashed the ball in his face as well. Have that one just for extra. Brilliant. That's the kind of tackle they say that you need to kind of rouse the crowd, innit?
Yeah.
Rouse me. I was just sitting back at home and I was like, go on, have him.
Matt Target, we spoke about him on the last episode that you and me did, Matt, and possibly even the one before. The turnaround that he's had in the last year or so, he's been brilliant this year. And as much as we've all said, left-back's probably a position we want to improve, there's no need to be doing that at the moment. Matt Target is a very good left-back at the moment. And I think that the improvement that we all saw in players like Konsa over the last year and how he's stepped up, I think we're seeing that in Matt Target now, that he has developed a lot in this last year and having a year's worth of Premier League experience with Villa. And playing in a settled back four with a very good goalkeeper behind him and a really informed Jack Grealish ahead of him. It's so easy for Matt Target to have good games now. But all the blocks he puts in and that slide tackle that you mentioned and the delivery that he's got for the goal as well. Excellent Matty Target, if you're watching. And Matty Cash on the other side as well. Two Matties, the fullbacks, excellent.
Yeah, the whole defence, Martinez, I think every player really, isn't it? If we could sit here and genuinely give 11 names and the subs. Jacob Ramsey comes on and looks a little starry, and he's got like 20 seconds to play. So yeah, fair play to Villa today, mate. I think it's like the big club performance. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, whatever, here's a 2-0 routine win. That's rare for, you know, us to feel that when we aren't in the Championship. So long may that feeling continue. Very good.
Yeah, I think that it's interesting, Matt Target, you know, because a lot of the other positions have had pressure on the position to kind of, you know, we've said, haven't we, that Villa needed to upgrade on what they got last season. And, you know, players who were in the first team, you know, needed to be replaced by better quality. That meant your bench was stronger. With respect to Neil Taylor, I don't think he's had anybody breathing down his neck. So the improved performance level he's had has, you know, it's obviously come from coaching, but it's come from within as well. And whether it's a kind of, you know, even if it's an unconscious realisation that, crikey, this team's going somewhere, I've got to really up my game if I want to kind of stay involved. But he's been brilliant. I don't think really, did Martinez have much to do? Did that defence really look like being breached?
No, not at all.
I think they did that.
Martinez came out a few times and claimed crosses and stuff and thought, yeah, confident, comfortable. I think possibly the caption for this one or the post tonight was confident and composed and stuff like this, which that's how I feel about Villa at the moment. I always remember, I know it sounds silly to keep bringing it up, but when we started well at the start of this season, every podcast we did, we were going, well, you know, this might run out at some point. And we're now almost at the halfway point of Aston Villa's season and the halfway point of most of everyone else's season because we're a few games behind. And it hasn't stopped yet. I think the test comes now that, yes, everyone kind of expected us to win tonight anyway because Newcastle are so poor. We're at home. You know, obviously we've had this break, but, you know, we've still been good this year. I think the test comes now probably in this next two games that we're playing Burnley again, who we struggled to break down a few weeks ago, that we now have to go and prove that we can break them down and put them to the sword. And then Southampton, which I think is a week today, that obviously, I almost said they battered us when we played them last time. That's probably not true because it was only the set pieces that won it. And it's just a 3-0 game. It feels like a battering. But that's a wrong that Villa will want to put right this time around. So I think those next two will kind of show a measure of how much Villa have progressed even in the last month or so. Because if you get to that 19th game for Villa and you're on potentially 35 points if you win them both, that's the points total we have for the entirety of last season. And we'd be having that at the halfway point this year. So the turnaround is incredible. And if we do something like that, even if we get 3 points out of the next two or four, Villa are on course for a really good season here. And because it's a bit of a weird one that the top teams aren't really winning consistently, like I think Jamie Carragher said, this is an opportunity for someone to slip in there like a Southampton or an Everton or a Villa. This could be Villa's year to get into that top six unexpectedly and kind of ahead of the target that nobody, I don't think, internally would be aiming that 2020 was, or 2021 was the year that Villa get into Europe. It's probably a 3-year plan or a 5-year plan. There's a really serious chance that Villa could actually go on and do this year. It's mental to even think about it because you think, oh, well, they'll fade away at some point, an injury might hit them or whatever, but so far, so good. And if that keeps up, we might be going to Europe next year.
They're on pace.
If we're allowed.
They're on pace for an extra 36 points based on current results. So if the game's going forward, 36 on top of 29. So that's, you know, considering that's, was that more than the points we had in that last season? You said 35?
35. We ended the season, I think. Yeah. So
they're on pace to do better than last season in the remaining games, which is, you know, just incredible. And even in that, added on to the 29 points we already have, that's, you know, it's a territory you couldn't even imagine last season. You know, after that West Ham game, you think, oh yeah, we could build on this. Half built on it. It's fantastic.
I don't want to get into your habit of jinxing stuff, because it's one thing jinxing by saying Newcastle are crap and them coming roaring back, which didn't happen. It's another thing jinxing the entire season. But looking at that points tally, you reminded us that we finished on 35 last season. We could match that by this time next week.
Yeah, I know. And it's not, I mean, obviously Burnley's a difficult game, Southampton's a difficult game, but they're both winnable. It's not, you're not looking at Man City and Liverpool. Yeah, exactly. If this time next week, literally, because it's, I think it's an 8 o'clock kickoff again, Villa could conceivably be on 36 points on 19 games. We had 35 points after 38 last year.
So this season's clearly nothing like last season at all, from top to bottom. But that puts you on like 65, 66 points maybe. So that's like last season, that would be fifth place, 1 point off fourth. Which is just, you know, touch wood, it doesn't go wrong from here on out. And there's a lot of the season to go left. But that is just some turnaround, that is.
The thing is, we've got more of a sample size now, because even though we're not even at the halfway point, we were saying these kind of things after like five or six games. Like, oh, Villa could maybe put a European run together. And you think, oh yeah, but we've only played five games. Like, let's not get carried away. We're almost at the halfway point now and are still performing to the same level and expected to perform over the same level. Obviously, injuries can hit and things like that, but obviously, people asking in the comments about Morgan Sanson. We'll get to him in a second. Just wanted to flash the league table up quickly, because it feels like you just kind of have to look at it at this point.
The biggest thing for me, like just cutting in, is Villa could, our pre-season expectation was like 15th, 14th.
Yeah, and I'd have been happy with that.
You feel like Villa could just do nothing from now on, like probably turn up in a few games and achieve that, which is, again, it's just a mind-blowing thing considering where we were this time. You know, last season probably worrying about things and worrying about the way the season was heading, which is
if you look at that top 10 or even the top 11, if you include Arsenal, and people are saying, well, you know, Chelsea have got a good side, you know, they could conceivably still get into the top six. You know, like I'm talking about general pundits here. Chelsea, they're a good bet for top six, I would say. We're on level on points with them. We've played two games less. Our goal difference is better. So if everyone's talking about Chelsea going, oh, they're a good side, they can get top six, why is anyone writing off Villa, West Ham even, and Everton breaking in there and finishing in that top six or even better than that? There's a serious chance Villa can do something here, which is, like I said, it sounds silly. I'm not going to get too carried away, 17 games into a season, but why not get carried away? Why not enjoy it a bit?
Just as a slight update, apparently Dean Smith said that Jack Grealish had a tight hamstring. And he's taken him off because of the four yellow cards. And he's gone to bed without any supper because of his strop as well.
No, so that's been turned off at home.
That's hot off the press. off the press, yeah. He's had his PlayStation controllers put in a drawer as well. So there you go.
Steve Bruce told him to roll his socks up as he walked past as well.
That's it, yeah. I've just been checking from Ash and... Dean Smith's playing his cards close to the chest. Bing! There's another cliche for you over the Morgan Sanson thing. So, which is standard Dean Smith, isn't he? He doesn't give much away until the ink is dry. But it looks imminent. He's going to have a battle, isn't he, to try and get the shirt off Marvellous the camera at this stage.
Oh yeah, so is John McGinn as well. I don't know how he fits in. I don't know whether he comes straight in. I don't know enough about his quality. I mean, the logistics of signing a player during COVID, who looks from another country, I don't know whether when he signs, has he got to isolate for 2 weeks? Don't know. This is probably some research we probably should have done off the podcast. But
I think there's like an elite sports waiver, so the rules don't apply to them, so to speak.
That's very interesting, though. I'll get one of the guys who's actually grafting on a Saturday night or on a Sunday to do an explainer piece on that. It's interesting, though, because you don't think about these things, you know.
Well, yeah. Because if we sign him, I think he's doing his medical in France, is what I've seen elsewhere. But if we sign him next Wednesday, you think, oh, well, he might play against Southampton. But if he's got a royal side for 2 weeks, we won't see him until the middle way through February. Yeah. So that is a factor. But is it a factor? It might not be.
We've got to train with a mask for the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, because he's coming into our bubble, isn't he? He's moving to a different country. Like, you'd think it would have an impact. So, yeah, get someone on that and do some actual work.
Get somebody who's better informed than us and with more effort to actually research it, and we'll bring that to you.
But when he does come, I mean, James I'm going to ask you because I feel like you're maybe better placed than either of us. Does he come straight in? Is it Douglas Luiz, McGinn and Sanson midfield? But then you've got Ross Barkley. Does Grealish play out wide? But I don't know. I don't know what happens. I suppose he's not going to come in and play straight away. But he's an upgrade on Conor Hourihan, who's just left. You look into the bench and bringing a kid in Jacob Ramsey on at the moment when you need an extra midfield player. He will probably get less game time now as a result of this. But if that's the case that Villa have got a better squad because of it, that's all you want at this stage as a fan.
I think he comes in. It's hard to see him coming in and starting after that performance, but I guess he comes in as a general upgrade. As much as I'm a big fan of Conor Hourihan and his attitude especially, he comes in as an all-round backup as well. He can play defensive midfield. I think Martin Lawrence spoke to me and Matt about the type of player he was. He can play defensive midfield, centre midfield, attacking midfield. He's a number eight. He can do pretty much whatever you need. So when Villa lose Douglas Luiz or they lose Jack, Touchwood, this doesn't happen. You know, these players might get injured, whatever. You know, they might get suspended in Jack Grealish's case. He comes in as an all-rounder who can step up in any of these positions for Aston Villa with a certain level of quality. It's a general, as we've said in all the transfer stuff we've done in the past, it's a general improvement in the depth of the squad. And as much as I like Jacob Ramsey as well, I think he's going to be a fantastic player. He's a senior pro, isn't he, Morgan Sanson? So, and he's been playing at the highest level of French football. People still underrate that league. I don't know why, but you know, he'll come in and maybe he'll be what Jordan Veretu should have been. Jordan Veretu, he's now killing it. He's done extremely well for Fiorentina and Roma since leaving the Villa. So, and he, you know, I think people look over his season because it was a relegation season. Nothing really mattered. But I think he'll come in and finally be the French player that leaves a lasting positive impact over multiple seasons for Villa.
Yeah, 10 years this month since we signed another midfielder from the French league as well, Jean de Macoun, who arrived in his daddy diamond jumper.
What a jumper that was, by the way.
You get the sense, you know, the Veretout one's really interesting, isn't it? Because it was almost a mishmash of recruitment strategies thrown together. Here's a bunch of players who we think have quality potential. Here's a couple of experienced senior English pros. Throw them together and get them to work. Now, you get the sense that the current transfer committee of Joanne Lange, Rob McKenzie, Christian Perslow and Dean Smith now, there's a little bit more thinking going into it. They'll know exactly what this guy can do and how he's an upgrade on what they've got and how they'll fit him in. And not only that, and this is probably coming back as a little bit of a criticism of Steve Bruce again, but you know, when players arrive in the Villa dressing room now, they're gonna be exposed to a high level of coaching that's gonna, you know, probably, you know, this guy's mid-20s and he's played Champions League football, so you know, it's not as if he's a rookie, but I think he'll get even better from playing in that Villa team. So, you know, stating the obvious, but I think it comes with a plan now. And Villa have done this in stages, haven't they? It's hard to transform the whole squad overnight, but they're just looking. Yeah. And from what I see, from what I hear about this guy and from what I see about the price we're getting him for, which is derisory according to Piers Boas, but tough luck, mate. That's why we do the deals.
Villa were right on the blower after that, weren't they, then? Oh, you can't exactly. Say, you can't hit the airwaves like that, son.
But what it looks like it represents a fantastic bargain. Now, we've said that before about players and they haven't lived up to the expectation. But you know, to get a player of that pedigree for the price that we've seen mentioned looks like a shrewd bit of business.
Yeah, it also just makes the squad stronger. Competition for the midfielders that are already there. Nakamba now has to work harder to keep his place. John McGinn's got to come back and get fight for his place. Conor Hourihan, with all due respect to him, and I really like him, and I expect he'll go on and do really well with Swansea and hopefully get promoted. I mean, he's gone out on loan, but you'd expect he leaves permanently in the summer. There's no threat of him coming on, is that, and affecting the squad to the rest of the players around them? Because they look around to the bench and there's a 19-year-old kid coming on ahead of Conor Hourihan. They look around the bench now, Marvellous Nakamba, Douglas Luiz, John McGinn, whoever, Ross Barkley, and think there's, like you said, a 26, I think, year-old Champions League experienced midfielder sat there waiting to take my place here. I've got to up my game to stay in this squad, and we're pushing for Europe with Villa this year. So let's get my game about me. Conor Hourihan has not been that player to come in and threaten anyone else in that midfield. So regardless of what Sanson himself brings as a footballer, it brings that mentality shift of, I need to up my game here to succeed and stay in this squad, and that benefits Aston Villa. That's the process of building a squad.
You also look at kind of the situation with Ross Barkley, who isn't an Aston Villa player full-time, and he might cost a lot of money. The situation with Douglas Luiz, where it looks like everything is lining up perfectly for Man City to execute that buy option at the end of the season due to their squad circumstances and the transfer deal we agreed with them in the first place to kind of line the move up like this. So I think Sanson, if you can play in every position in the midfield, it works really well for Villa because they get him, they can bed him in 6 months earlier than they need to when they need a replacement if Ross Barkley goes back and Luiz leaves. So they've got that option there, which I think that, to me, not playing Sanson immediately is like the best case scenario because it's like Villa, they're a club that thinks now.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say that, James. It's almost like they know what they're doing. Who's taking away the Aston Villa we've come to know and tolerate during these last 10 years? This Aston Villa knows what to do. Hey, I wanted to wish James Chester a happy birthday. Many happy returns. Do you want to tell the story of that, Dan? Because it still makes me chuckle.
I mean, I know this is going out on Facebook Live. Personally, as me, and this isn't as Claret and Blue or the company or whatever.
Oh no, we fully endorse you.
Yeah, all right. I hate Facebook personally. I don't use.
Oh no, don't endorse that. I thought you were going to slag off Facebook stupid comments.
Mark Zuckerberg's coming in with it.
I'm just saying, I don't use it because I just don't think, for what I use Twitter for in terms of talking about video and stuff like that, I don't think I can find what I'm looking for over on Facebook. So I did a post today.
That's called outreach, now.
No, still loads of people watching. No offense to people that use Facebook. So this is from my opinion. But I put this post out saying, many happy returns to James Chester, former villain. What are your favourite memories of Chesley? Just to see what people think about him. Everyone likes James Chester. Nice little post. He was celebrating a goal. And the top comment that came in straight away was saying, oh, well, I like Chester, but he's not back at Villa, is he? And someone else commented saying, I don't know what the point of this post is. He's a Stoke player now. He's not coming back. And I was like, hang on a minute. Have I just like lost my mind a little bit to think, many happy returns? Is there like that isn't just like a back country thing that I've heard. Many happy returns means like, happy birthday, Matt. Many happy returns. And people read it as, like, happy return to James Chester coming back from his loan spell, and he's back for Villa, which, I mean, everyone's like in this little football world and it's the transfer window, so maybe they just scroll past it and thought, there's like party emojis in the text as well. So I had to tweet it saying, oh, I just lost my mind here. Like, I am right in saying many happy returns is a thing. And I Googled it after. I spoke to my mum about it and Googled it. And apparently, I mean, I feel like I've lost my head here. Apparently, many happy returns is a thing because you say many happy returns as in you want it to keep returning, because if it keeps returning, you're getting older. So many happy returns as in the keep returning because you're getting older and you're having a happy long life. That's where it comes from, apparently.
I didn't know that. Well, listen, it's an education. I thought it would be many happy returns in terms of you return. You know, if you get good returns, it means you got to get good presents or you get good things happening. So... Oh, mate, every day's a school down here, isn't it?
Some sort of lad in the comments. Just brought his chest back.
I just want Jason with that.
That's how my day started. A little, like, I started my work shift thinking, oh, it's James Chester's birthday. I saw the Villa official Twitter tweet about it. I was like, oh, I'll do a post for that as well for our audience. And that first one that came in, thinking that he returned from loan, just made me laugh. So, yeah, Dean says, Dan, just stick with happy birthday. It keeps you out of trouble. Also, never say return in a transfer window. So, yeah, maybe you're right, but...
You are going to get it now, though, Dan. It's going to be Aston Villa journalist tips James Chester.
Yeah, I sound like Dan Rowlandson previously appeared on the Claret and Blue podcast to talk about James Chester's return. Yeah.
Yeah, we need to book better guests, James, I think.
Right. Should we call it a day?
Yeah, I'm done with Tom. Is it 20-11?
20-11. I mean, it's another 8 p.m. game next week for Southampton. I think it's a night game on, is it Wednesday? We play Burnley as well. So I do quite enjoy these late night podcasts. I kind of wind down for the evening and then I get wound up when there's something gone wrong. But it's always nice when Villa win. So here's hoping to another couple of wins for Villa, and we keep pushing up this Premier League table as far as we can. Get those games in hand played and won, and all of a sudden you're looking at a real push for top six or even better. So keep it going, Villa. You're doing us proud at the moment.
We've got quite a lot of fixtures, haven't we? Coming up, it's a busy schedule. So we're going to be back many times, you know, into your ear holes in the next couple of weeks. In fact, there's going to be many happy returns from us, isn't there, over the next... God, I think it's time.
Let's get out of here. Thank you very much for everyone who's tuned in live, watching on Facebook, my favourite social media platform, or watching live on YouTube. If you're watching this not live after the fact and thinking, what are we waffling on about? Why don't I edit this rubbish out? We do these live. There's no editing these days. We cannot save ourselves from the nonsense. So get involved. Get involved live after the games. You can leave your comments. You can interact with us. If you're not watching live, though, YouTube comment sections, iTunes reviews, Spotify, all the rest of it. This is not an ad for whatever beer Matt Kendrick is currently holding up. We do not get paid enough. Whatever that is.
Don't like the taste of it, but it's 88 calories. So.
Speaking of many happy returns, hopefully the audience watching return for the next episode, which should be Wednesday evening, because I feel we're driving people away week by week. So we'll be back on Wednesday evening for the Burnley post-match review. We might do something else in the week and have the extra James maybe. We were going to do something transfer related and then put it off because of the COVID thing, so we might do that after the window shut maybe, or we'll do a Morgan Sanson episode, whatever, I don't know. There'll be plenty of stuff coming. Stay tuned to the Carton Blue podcast. Thank you all for watching. Thank you too for joining me this evening, and we'll see you again in a few days.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, up the Villa.